I'm going to talk about Trans Pathways, which is a study of the mental health and care pathways of trans and gender diverse young people in Australia, across Australia. And I've been asked to speak about access to medical and mental health services. So just to acknowledge the other investigators on this project, in particular Penelope Strauss, who led this as part of her master's project. So I'd just like to acknowledge that we're on Whadjuk Noongar Boodja and pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging. And I'd also like to acknowledge, and this comes back to what was spoken about before around the imagery that we use when we're putting out booklets for young people around mental health. I think Jenny, you described this. It's about using imagery that is positive, that relates to young people. So this, our images from Trans Pathways were all done by Jason Mitchell. I'd just like to acknowledge his work because it's been absolutely superb. So Trans Pathways was Australia's largest study of the mental health and care pathways of trans and gender diverse young people, 14 to 25. It was an online survey, and we it's a mix of qualitative and quantitative work. So we have, there were a lot of scales, but we also allowed young people to talk about their experiences to kind of gain a richer understanding of what that experience. And what I've just shown you here is the word clouds from the questions around gender and sexuality, and goes back exactly to what Rob has just said. There are so many ways that young people describe their gender and their sexuality. Of interest, and again related to what Rob was showing in some of the data from his study, is that almost half of our participants identified in non-binary terms. So, and these are people who were born in late 90s, early 2000s. Okay, so I just want to put the access into some perspective. I'm not going to go through all the mental health findings from Trans Pathways, but what I will say is that three quarters of young people had experienced either anxiety or depression, so that was evidenced by a self-report of diagnoses and also by scales. So that's a massive amount, and that's 10 times higher than general population adolescents from the Young Minds Matter survey. 80% had engaged in self-harm in their lifetime, seven times higher than we see from Young Minds Matter, and an astounding one in two young people had attempted to end their life in the survey. So that's 20 times higher than we see in general population adolescents, and 14 times, six times higher than we see in adults from the general population. So you can see here that access to medical and mental health services is essential for this population. So very quickly, and I don't have time to go into this, but why do young people experience mental health difficulties? Well, it's not about being trans. It's about their experience of being trans within a society that doesn't accept trans young people. And you can just read that quote over there. But what we did ask was we asked people whether they had experienced any of these things. And you can see that most of our young people had experienced some form of rejection, bullying, issues with school, university and TAFE. And I'll just highlight for the purpose of this talk, high rates of discrimination and feelings of being isolated from health services. We've done some analysis of these drivers of poor mental health, and the majority of them are associated with increased rates of self-harm and suicidality. And service isolation specifically, so 61% of participants had experienced being isolated from services, and they had higher rates of self-harming, suicide attempts, suicide thoughts, and PTSD and anxiety than those who hadn't felt isolated from services. So besides being a human right to be able to access services in a safe way, it actually can have a detrimental effect on young people if they aren't able to access them. So in the survey, we asked about experiences of young people who had seen mental or medical health professionals in relation to their gender. And we asked about all of these different services, and I'll talk about some of them in detail. But 42% of trans young people had reached out to a service provider who did not understand, respect, or have previous experience with gender diversity. Okay, so general practitioners. So I need to position myself so I can look at the screen at the same time as speaking. Most people had reached out to their GP. That's often the first port of call for trans young people. A majority were satisfied with the service, but some were dissatisfied with the service. And I'm just going to present some quotes so you can see what young people said. So mixed reports on whether the GP was understanding or knowledgeable. A lot of times young people felt that they needed to educate their GP about what it was to be trans and what kind of medical support they might require. A lot of people were told they were just going through a stage or a phase and that they would grow out of it. But and that trans-friendly GPs usually have a long waiting list. So especially in a place like Perth where we're maybe a little bit behind the times, dare I say, compared to places in this side of things in behind Sydney and Melbourne. We only have a few really specialised GPs that people feel comfortable going to and it's very difficult to get in to see them. So some people explained having transphobic reactions from their GPs and others just said that GPs just needed more education and once they were educated, then they were happy to help them. So 43% of young people had seen psychiatrists. A lot of people had seen a private psychiatrist, so you can just imagine what the cost of something like that is for a group of young people, many of who are students or unemployed. Not as many were satisfied and a few more were dissatisfied with psychiatry services. I think one of the main reasons for this is because people needed a letter from their psychiatrist in order to access medical transitioning. And so psychiatrists are often seen as gatekeepers to be able to do that. So some of the experiences people had, in general, the comments were more negative around psychiatrists than they were positive. A lot of misgendering, a feeling of being gatekeepers, definitely a non-acknowledgement of non-binary identities and why someone might want to access gender-affirming hormones if they were non-binary, a lack of trans knowledge and trans-friendly services, and people feeling that they had to prove that they were trans enough to be deserving of accessing their hormone intervention. And there was never really scope for ongoing psychiatric support because it was all really about assessment. And we find that in some of the gender services around Australia as well, and that people are so busy trying to just provide assessment that they're not actually able to give young people ongoing support. Medical transitioning services. So 35% of our sample had accessed medical transitioning services. That is probably not as high as we might think, but these are young people, and because we didn't ask for parental consent, there would be young people who are quite young who aren't able to access something like the gender diversity service at Royal Children's Hospital, Perth Children's Hospital. And most people were satisfied when they had accessed the support, and understandably they would be when they'd been given the hormones that are so important to them. But I think the key there is when they had received the support. So we know that being able to get transitioning services is very difficult. For example, in Western Australia, we have no adult dedicated service. There is a few practitioners that are running out of one of our hospitals, but that's it. And we also know that in places like Sydney, they no longer have a child's gender service. So being able to actually enter into a service and then get timely assessment and medication is quite difficult. So just to end off, recommendations that have come from Trans Pathways, and obviously this is just one very, very small part of a large data set, is increased funding for specialised trans and gender diverse services. We'd like to improve services where they are substandard, so that might include services that aren't given gender-affirming care or services that are able to give care but aren't adequately funded to be able to do that. To enhance accessibility for intervention, and then, as many people have touched on before today, being able to train and educate health staff and students who are going through programs in order to have a better understanding of the needs and the unique needs of transgender diverse young people. I always like to end on this slide because we asked young people to tell us what was so great about being trans, and we also, there was a parallel survey for parents, and we asked parents to tell us what was great about having trans kids, and people have some really wonderful things to say. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that for most young people, they have something good to say. My favourite one is the, oh my God, gosh, I can't say this because I'm too old, yas. There are so many aspects of our culture that I can understand that outsiders can't, and that I experience gender euphoria. And I'm going to end off by plugging the AusPath conference that is happening in Perth in October. So if you're interested in trans health, I would strongly recommend that you come along. It's going to be wonderful. And we have some brilliant plenary speakers, including a panel of three sister girls that have come from all over Australia who are going to be talking. So we have scholarships available for trans community members who are West Australian based, anywhere in Western Australia, including travel. So if you are part of the community, come and see me afterwards and we can talk about getting you a scholarship. Thanks.